Welcome to the Winning with Shopify podcast. This is the podcast to help you scale your Shopify store into a money-making machine. Do you want to increase conversions by as much as 54% for your Shopify store? Now you can with AliaLearn. Reward new site visitors for learning about your products and brands through Alia's engaging on-site app. Want to find out more? AliaLearn are offering an exclusive one-month free trial for WWS listeners. To claim your free offer, go to alialearn.com/winningwithshopify and book a consultation. Now, over to your host, Nick Truman.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Winning with Shopify podcast. If anyone's not tuned in before, my name's Nick and I have been hosting the podcast for over 3 years now. It's been an absolute marathon, but strong we will continue into 2024. It's currently the 22nd of December in 2023 and today we've got a very, very different episode for you, a very different type of episode as well. Today we're going to be sharing with you a webinar that my colleague Rob and myself, both of us from Spec, which is a PPC and SEO consultancy that I run, We did a whole webinar all about increasing your conversion rates and conversion rate optimization. We did do this as a webinar. We were both on video and also sharing slides as well. So if you actually want to watch this and see the slides we're talking about, see the examples and the case studies we were sharing on the screen of things we actually changed on clients' websites and some other examples of just good CRO that we found, go to YouTube and type in Winning with Shopify and it will be the latest video on there, unless you're listening to this after the 29th of December. So it won't be the latest video then because we would have probably posted another one after that period. So yeah, it should be the latest video. It'd be the 22nd of December, 2023 is when we would have posted it. So go and check out the YouTube video if you want to watch it to see the slides and see what's going on. We also have a Q&A at the end. Obviously, this is not live, so please don't start asking questions. But if you do want to ask questions, winningwithshopify.com or add comments to the YouTube video. But as I say, if you want to watch it, go to YouTube. If not, feel free to leave this running. You might be out on a run right now. You might be driving in the car, or you might just be listening on Alexa, which means you're going to need to just listen to it. There'll still be some amazing learning, so make sure you get a pen and paper or a nice sharp pencil. But if we don't speak or you don't listen to an episode before Christmas now, have an amazing Christmas. We'll see you again in the new year. And if you're watching this after Christmas, I hope you had an amazing Christmas. So thanks again for tuning in and I hope you enjoy this webinar.
Welcome everybody to today's CRO webinar. My name's Rob. I will be part host. We're sort of sharing hosting duties today, myself and Nick. We're from Spec, and we primarily work with PPC and SEO on Google, a little bit of Bing, and we work with websites. That's what we do. We get traffic into websites, and we get that traffic to convert. And that's what we're here to talk about today. We're here to talk about getting that traffic to convert. But Nick, do you want to give us a quick run through of what we've got going on today?
Yeah, absolutely. So we've got a few little sections here. I can see loads more people joining in just as we said we were going to hit record and start this. So anyone who's joining in now, welcome. It's fantastic to have you guys with us. As Rob says, I'm going to kick off with just a couple of little slides. I'm going to hand over to Rob then. Rob's going to run through some of the basics, what CRO is and what we're looking for here, what we're trying to achieve. We're very much a team, an agency here who we're much more interested in making sure that what we do has value and meaning. And even if that means taking 5 minutes before we start to understand what it is. So Rob's going to run through a little bit of what is CRO, what are some of these buzzwords we're talking about, some things you need to make sure you have and do before you start making changes to the site. Otherwise, you won't know what's worked and it will say it probably won't be as effective. Then Rob's going to hand back over to me and I'm going to go through the main meat of today's sandwich, which for any vegans, there is a meat-free option as well. I will be running through in quite a lot of detail, actually, and happy to take questions as we go as well. There's a Q&A button, there's the chat button. Happy to take questions, but I'm going to go through quite a lot of examples I've seen on websites. Some are clients, some are not clients. Just examples of where we see things that I would traditionally expect to find in Google Analytics or in your A/B testing tools. Spoiler alert for Rob's bit. Some really good insights actually into conversion rate increases. And when we say CRO, conversion rate optimization, the other thing to bear in mind through both Rob's section and my section in the Q&A at the end is we're not just talking about that specific metric. It's not just about getting the conversion rate metric itself to go up. In some situations, that might actually come down. However, we're looking at making you more money. So it might be lifetime value, it might be average order value, or whatever we're doing. So it's about getting more from what you guys are spending out. So I'm going to share my screen. I'm going to backseat drive while Rob's going through. But yeah, just give you guys a quick overview. We're happy to send these slides out as well. So if you want a copy of these, do let us know. You can shout that now on any of those various buttons. Again, I think, as Rob said earlier, I think the chat button might not be working today. It certainly wasn't working last week. But yeah, you can use the Q&A button. If you want to copy the slides, just let us know. You can drop us an email afterwards, et cetera, et cetera. So anyway, I'm going to give you a quick overview to what we're talking about. I'm going to hand over to Rob. So first thing is, why are we here? We're obviously here to increase conversion rates. And why is it so important to increase that conversion rate? I think one of the most important parts of it is, if you've got a better conversion rate, say you're spending £10,000 or $10,000 or whatever currency you're in, you're spending a lot of money every month on ads, you're paying for your team, you're doing lots of work. If your conversion rate was to double, you're not spending any more on your team, any more on, we might have a couple of bits of resources, but you're not spending any more on advertising or anything like that, but you've just doubled your revenue that's coming out of it, which is a bit of a game changer in terms of what you're going to invest. So this really is about making more money for the businesses that you guys own or work within or are looking to help in your careers. So Rob, over to you, mate.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. So we're going to start off, and apologies to anybody who is sort of a bit further into their conversion rate optimization journey. You've done it before. You know a bit about it. You're just trying to tweak. You're trying to get some insight into the next level up or some other things you could do. I am just going to take it back a little bit just to explain to some people who might not be quite so adverse in conversion rate optimization. So I'd like to just quickly go through sort of what it is, a few of the basics, sort of how we measure it, and just sort of setting a bed really for Nick to then develop on and show you the good stuff. So what is CRO? So it stands for conversion rate optimization. And this is a quote that I've taken from Hotjar. This link actually goes off to talk. Hotjar has some content about conversion rate optimization. So if anybody would like a copy of the slides, please do make yourself known or drop us an email and we can share that with you. There are some hyperlinks that go off. But Hotjar defines conversion rate optimization as the practice of increasing the percentage of users who perform a desired action on a website. And most of you today, I think, are e-commerce. So that action, the desired action for us, is a purchase. We're looking to get people to buy from our websites. Obviously, if you are lead gen, you might have different variations. It might be a form fill. It might be something like that. But we're talking about purchases, essentially. If we reference conversions, we're talking about purchases. So the sum to figure out, sorry, just quickly jump back, Nick. Sorry, you're quick on the buttons. Just to jump back. So to figure out your conversion rate, it is conversions divided by site traffic. And that gives you your conversion rate. So for example, 50 purchases, you've had 1,000 users to the site, that would give you a 5% conversion rate. Now, there is a caveat with where I've put site traffic there, because if anyone sort of is confident in Google Analytics, you'll see that there is a couple of different conversion rate conversion rates it can give you. It can give you session conversion rate and user conversion rate. And not going too far into it, but a single user could have multiple sessions. So load up your website, go make a cup of tea, come back. That's then a second session. So if they do buy something, that's sort of a 50% conversion rate for that individual purchase. So personally, I like to do my conversion rate by user. If I've had 1,000 users to the site, how many of those made a purchase? And that's how I like to do it. We do talk a little bit about GA4 as we go on. So this is a sort of example scenario. We're getting traffic into the site. You know, our SEO team is doing a great job. Our PPC team is doing a great job. We're getting traffic into the site. The users that are coming to the site are also engaging. We can see that they're clicking through the pages, they're spending some time on the site, they're potentially adding products to cart. And this is a really important step as well, because before we go on to checking our conversion rate, are the users that are coming to the website actually the right users? Because we could drive thousands of people into a website that just aren't the right user and they're never going to convert, and then start trying to do conversion rate and we're not going to see any results because they were never going to buy from us in the first place. They were the wrong users. So do have a look at your engagement rate on GA4 or wherever you're measuring your metrics. It's basically the reverse of bounce rate, just to make sure that people are engaging, they're reading through the website. Potentially, hopefully they're adding stuff to the cart, but they're not purchasing. They're not converting into customers. So that's when we know we need to increase or we need to improve our conversion rate. So let's look at how we can improve our conversion rate. So there are some examples. You'll find loads of different ways. And I think Nick sort of touched on this very lightly, that there are a ton of ways to achieve improving your conversion rate. And it's not necessarily dropping your prices and putting a sale on and things like that. Obviously, we do expect sometimes to see your conversion rate increase when you make those sort of offers. But you can actually, you'd be surprised at what things you can tweak to actually get a higher conversion rate. And these are just some examples that I found from BigCommerce. And again, that link will take you to, I think there was about 30 different things that BigCommerce had outlined for potential items that could increase your conversion rate. As you'll find out as we go on later on, Nick's actually handpicked some that we've seen have worked from clients that we work with, or stuff that we see and we think, actually, that's such a good idea. We'd love to do that ourselves. But some examples can be improving your quality of your images on page. That can help build the trust. I'm sure many of you have seen dropshipping websites where they're just copying images from Google, or, you know, really low quality images. It's not increasing the trust. As soon as that customer trusts in the brand, it might be the first time they've met you. So trying to get them to part with their money, something as simple as increasing the quality of your images could do that. Offering free shipping, providing limited time coupon codes to try and increase a sense of urgency. These are all ideas of things that could potentially work. But the main caveat is that everybody's customer base is going to be different. Whether you are sort of an FMCG consumer packaged goods company, or maybe you're you sell trainers, or you sell skincare, your audience is going to relate to a completely different set of conversion rate items that another customer base would. So one of the main things that we need to do is understand who our audience is, because once we understand who they are, we can understand what they're looking for and what they're going to resonate with, and that's where we can start making improvements. So if you could jump through to the next one, Nick. And sorry, I'm not going to read through all of those examples on there. Again, if you would like a copy of the slides, or you'd like a copy of the video, drop us a message in the Q&A with your email address, or drop us an email. I think everyone's got our email now. So how do we know where to focus our efforts? Because anyone, again, who's used to looking at data, you can see a conversion rate based on channel. So you might have a really good conversion rate for SEO, but your email is not doing so well. You might have a different conversion rate based on landing page. So people that land on the homepage are more likely to convert than somebody that lands on a product page or a collection page. It may even be a different demographic. You know, perhaps certain ages are converting better than other ages. So these are all things that we could focus our efforts into, or even just looking at the entire journey and the checkout process, which I know Nick is going to talk about baskets and carts later on. So to try and find out where we want to focus our efforts, we are going to be looking at some of the data to find out, you know, where should we start? Where's a good place? And Shopify, this is actually data from 2023, that they state that the average e-commerce conversion rate is around 2.5% to 3%. That does come with some caveats, though. That's based on the industry. That's based on a load of sort of variations. But if you just type into Google average e-commerce conversion rate, you will get that quote from Shopify. So you can see what their caveats are there. But essentially, it's that every website is different, every customer base is different, but really we should be aiming for something around 2.5 to 3% as a benchmark, and then, you know, to the moon, essentially, after that. Next slide, please, Nick. So this is where we find our data. If we're sort of measuring with our clients and talking about sort of what's doing well based on conversion rate, we'll jump into GA4. And I've just taken a quick screenshot here. You'll see this is in the area for acquisition. So it's telling us where our traffic has come from, and it's currently filtered to session, source, and medium. So it's telling us where that user journey started. Did they come through Google cost per click? Did they come through Google organic? We've got Facebook paid in there. Now, as you scroll along, anybody that's not really used to GA4, please, again, reach out to us and let us know, because we've got a ton of documentation about how to, just the basics of how to navigate GA4 and find this stuff. But conversion rate, especially user conversion rate, isn't a default metric in this table. So you do need to add it. And there's a little pencil in the top right-hand corner, which you can click on, and that will add user conversion rate in. But you can see this percentage in a number of different ways. So as I said, this is now based on channel. So it's looking at the source and medium. It's come from Google, it's come from Facebook. You can also see it by landing page. You can also see it by different conversion points as well. So this is where we will start our information. And again, it doesn't have to be GA4, just anywhere where you've got user and conversion data. We can then figure out, using that sum, conversions divided by traffic, we can work out our percentage. So again, looking for anything above 2.5, that's what we're aiming for. So how do we know if it's working? So there are two main ways. The first one is the sort of the paid route, which is split testing using apps. Now, there used to be a free version of conversion rate optimization testing called Google Optimize. Unfortunately, a lot of the users complained about the platform, so Google has closed it. They have said that they're going to be creating some new integrations with GA4 in the future, but there's nothing at the moment. There's no great free alternatives. But essentially what apps will do is they will create what we call a split test, which is where you can have two variations of something. So you can have your current checkout, for example. Let's have our current basket, our cart, and then we've done a redesign. We've added some new features to the cart that we think may improve things. You can then split your traffic 50-50 to the old design and to the new design, and then monitor which one performs better. And we do this because we want to know what it is that our customers are relating to, what's resonating with them. We could go and change a whole load of stuff and then suddenly conversion rate goes up, but we've got no clue what it was that actually resonated with our customer. So we couldn't replicate that. It was a bit of a stab in the dark. But that's what these apps are great for. And again, I've hyperlinked that word there, apps, which will take you to, I think it's the top 10 paid and free versions of the conversion testing, where you can, some of them you can do split testing, some of them are a bit more restricted, some of them are quite cheap, sort of £20 a month, some of them go up to thousands of pounds a month. So yeah, please do go and have a look. If you don't have the budget to set up an app and to sign up to an app, there are ways that we can do it, which is to release the individual elements methodically. So we've done our measurements, we've looked to see where we want to improve, and we've sort of honed in on, we're getting loads of traffic, we're getting people adding things to the cart, but they're not checking out. So it's like, right, there's something between the adding to cart to check out that we need to improve. When you've redesigned them, you've come up with some ideas, perhaps looking at competitors and things like that, do them one by one. So don't release all of your ideas at once, because you won't know which it is that's worked. So that's what I mean by methodically. Pick one great one, make the change, see if it's had an improvement. If it hasn't, then you can decide yourself. If it's gone down, change it back. If it hasn't changed at all, perhaps leave it if you prefer the design, and then make the next change and monitor how that's changing your conversion rate. And obviously do bear in mind that traffic will go up and down anyway, so don't be harsh on your February numbers based on what you did in November, if that makes sense. November is likely to be higher in December because we're in peak, whereas February might be a bit quieter. And final thought, I guess, it is your customer base that we're trying to entice to purchase. So the things that we are doing to increase that conversion rate has to relate to them. It has to be things that they want to see. So things that you can do to find that information is check your customer reviews. Has anybody gone on to, perhaps you've got Trustpilot or you've got Google reviews or something like that. Have they ever said what they liked or didn't like? Or maybe they loved the fact that the delivery was so quick, but there's no mention of delivery on the cart. And something like, you know, delivery is usually 3 to 5 days, can increase our conversions. Check close competitors. What are your nearest competitors doing on their checkout pages or on their product pages or collections to increase their conversions? The most obvious one, I guess, ask your customers. Can you send out a survey or perhaps send them an email after they've made a purchase, if they've made a purchase, asking them the kind of things that they're looking for from their experience on your website? What kind of things would they likely look for on another person's website? And then the final thing, test everything. Don't just assume. We want to make sure that the changes that we're making are accurate and they're making the improvements that we want to see. So that was a really quick run through of the basics of CRO. So hopefully you've all sort of managed to grip onto that. Nick's now going to go through some really cool stuff that we've seen and sort of level it up a little bit.
Amazing. Thanks so much, Rob. Right. So quickly, the do's and donuts, which was Rob's idea to call it donuts instead of don'ts. So do, and again, repeat a couple of things Rob said, but remember this as we go through. So the first thing is, do make sure that you test stuff, come up with creative hypotheses. So like Rob was saying, come up with ideas and go like, okay, we're going to change this, see what that does. Do talk to your customers, ask them what they want and what they think. It's really important. And finally, add new features and functions to help your customers find what they want and buy from you. The things to do not, or the donuts, don't test the same thing more than once, expecting a different result. That's Einstein's theory of insanity. So don't do that. Number two is, don't try things without any basis of hope. So don't go like, I'm just going to try this because I don't think it's going to work. That's a bad thing to try. Try something that you do think is going to make a massive difference. Don't listen to the loud minority and ignore the silent majority, which is what we had to Richard Chappell, who used to be a CMO at Gymshark, had him on a webinar last week. And that should be live on YouTube shortly as well, once one of our teams had a chance to add it. But yeah, he was saying, don't ignore the silent majority. So a lot of your customers might like something one way, but actually you focus on something quite negative, or you focus on changing it because one person's complained. And let's face it, the person's complained is not your majority, that's the minority. And finally, don't overload your UX with so many things that it becomes hard to use, because you might actually add something that people do want to interact with and is going to help conversion, but had a negative effect because your UX is too busy, as in there's just too much stuff on the screen. Your site,
I think that can also lower trust as well, kind of, when you've got pop-ups coming up left, right and center.
Yep, absolutely. Completely agree, Rob. Lovely. So I've split into four sections. Ignore zero. I called it zero because we're not going to cover it. But these are key customer moments. These are things that happen in your customer journey on your website, regardless of what you do. I mean, let's face it, every website is similar with a few things that are different, which is your brand message, your products, etc. But the general makeup of an e-commerce site is going to be pretty similar. So they land on your website. We're then going to look at how they add to basket. Then we're going to talk about how we can make them add more things to baskets, upsells, cross sells, and some examples of sites that do that very well. Then they go into checkout, which most of us then are like, sweet, give us your credit card. There's opportunities without slowing the customer down or preventing them from buying whilst making the checkout section more profitable for you and can increase average order value as well as the conversion rate. And also a lot of people that go into checkout don't actually purchase. So we can change that. We can encourage people at the checkout stage to purchase. And then also, you might not be thinking about this at all, but once they've purchased, there's an opportunity to make them buy even more before you've even sent a product out. So we'll come on to that as and when we get there. So section one then, so adding to baskets, not section zero. They've landed on the site. Now, how do we get them to add something into basket? So these are some questions I would ask, and I'm going to start showing some examples of sites that do this really well. So the first thing is have a think about where they land on your website. And to go further than having a think, have a look at Google Analytics. It will tell you. And same in Shopify Analytics. It would, if you use Shopify or Magento, it has a good backend system as well. Have a look at where people actually land on the site. Where's the first entry point? Therefore, what do you need to do to try and encourage them to purchase based on where they've landed, based on where they've come from, what they think before? And can they get from we call it on Shopify, a collection. If you're not on Shopify, it'd be a category. So can they get from a collection or category to a product? Is that nice and simple? I know it sounds really obvious, but are you enticing them to do that? And we'll come on to that as well. Is the customer able to actually make a buying decision? And a good place, and I put it in italics here, a good place to start looking at this is what questions the customers ask you as a business, as the brand. Do they ask you how big it is? How's it going to fit? How much energy does it use? Well, you could start answering these questions on the website, because the people that have asked you, they're only the ones that have asked. The ones that haven't asked that did want to know that have left your site and not purchased from you. Fact. So you need to make sure we're asking them good questions. Are there compelling reasons to actually buy the product? I didn't put in, but do have a think about, is it a decent product or not? We have had situations before where our clients not had a great product, and the reviews reflect that, the returns reflect that. Could be quite a painful conversation, especially coming from us, not somebody internally in the brand. But we've got to speak our minds, and we've got to use the data we've got. And do you give customers reasons to actually buy from you? Is there a reason, like, come buy from us because X, Y, Z? So to get them to add to basket, we first need to get them to a product page. So let's look at some examples. So TK Maxx, this is on a what we call a collection or a category. And on here, and I've put some notes on the right, so I've got loads of examples of these, so we are going to whistle through these. But the TK Maxx's brand is all about you don't pay the retail price. So they've listed the retail price, they've listed the TK Maxx price. So we take that first one, it was £40, it's now £12.99. What a fantastic bargain. And in TK Maxx Orange, it says save £27 and a penny. And if you're in the US, it's TJ Maxx. Same organization, just this is the UK version. And you'll have a dollar symbol as well, but similar sorts of prices. So the savings are clearly outlined. And also there is the quick add to bag and wish list, those two icons at the top right of the four different product images on there as well. So there's a lot of reasons why you want to click through to that product or actually add like 10 of them to your basket or your wish list and then filter through them afterwards. So really nice, clear way you want to shop on that site. It's a brand called John Lewis, who in the UK we know and love, and they have a famous TV advert every year. If you're not in the UK, you might not be might not be familiar with John Lewis. But John Lewis kind of, they have a few of their own branded products, but they generally sell other brands, and they kind of set the bar for just premium, really good, but mass market retailer. They have really good extended warranties. Their customer service is outstanding. Yeah, and they do things that you wouldn't get if you bought direct from the retailer. But on here, we can see comparing four TVs here, so four Samsung TVs, something I fortunately haven't had to do for a while because my TVs lasted fantastically. But it has a comprehensive comparison information for a large item purchase. It's not a small item. You're paying £1,000 or up to, I think, £16.99 is the highest one on there, but it gives you an energy rating. It tells you you can get cash back. It's got the price. It's got how many reviews they've got and what the review rating is. So I don't know how clear it is on your screens, but the second and fourth ones have got 4.5 star reviews, but they've got more reviews, whereas the other two have got five star, but only five and nine review in terms of quantity. And also the fourth one, I don't know if that has an interest credit option. So the first one, two, and three, you could buy on finance because it's quite a large purchase, etc. Which means, this is my point on this page really, is the customer here is focused on which one shall I add to cart, which one shall I have a look at, rather than shall I buy a TV or not. We kind of almost like leapfrogged that stage and gone, look, there's loads of great stuff, and get them engrossed in the detail. They're more likely to buy the more they understand the product. Education is really important. Some of you might have seen Allbirds. They've been voted in the top 10 Shopify stores for the last 2 or 3 years now. I think I found the ratings. But here, very simple, a very opposite, you know, it's a very different type of purchase, but the opposite of what John Lewis are doing, but also not doing what TK Maxx were doing. They've got multiple colors here. They've got a bestseller on the right-hand side one. Sorry, the first and second one, and then the right-hand side also says water repellent on it as well. So giving a good amount of information. And they've been very particular, and I've watched Allbirds' website over the years, and they keep moving what the first filter and second filters are on the left-hand side. They keep changing those. They're obviously A/B testing, which is the most important filter to put on based on the page I'm on, who I am, what I might be buying. And we'll come on to that a little bit more as we go through. But you see, I'm just on the main women's shoes page here, so they don't know if I want some trainers or anything. So they put these three products at the top. And there's more products if I had scrolled down. And on the left-hand side, we've got trainers, active shoes, water-repellent shoes, flats, sail shoes, etc. So quite a nice journey on their collections on how to drill down to the right sort of product you want. And then you've got the sizes as well. And you can actually see under each product, there's a whole load of images, which are quite cool. So you can see some of the different colors. And there's also an arrow to say, we've got this in loads of colors. So why don't you explore some colors, see what other colors we might have. So a good range of colors and variants for the same products, the size and color there. Okay, so let's assume we've clicked through the collection now, or they've landed on a product page. So let's look at some product pages here. So I've got quite a few examples of this one. So this is Tentree. So if you look at the colors there, it's got the three core colors, and then it's got four special editions colors. They're just other colors, but it makes them sound way better, doesn't it? Oh, of course I want a special edition. Like, and especially if it told me they only do this special edition for a limited amount of time. And also, when you land, it always puts you on a special edition that costs slightly more than the cheaper version, but it's special. Of course you want the special one, don't you? Which is good marketing. Next point is it's got 98 reviews, and that's nice and clearly displayed under the title. Instead of talking like product description, which sounds very dry and boring, might be what your warehouse call it, might be what your manufacturers call it, not what a customer cares about. A customer wants to connect to the product. And I'm not going to overemphasize the emotive side of stuff because you can go too far with it. But customers, you know, there is an emotive connection to anything you buy. You know, the way your brain works is it's essentially connecting neurons in your brain to make you happy. That's what your brain's mission in life is make you happy. And so meeting the product, especially when you're paying £264.32, which I'm assuming is a conversion from some rounded number in dollars. But meet the product is so much more friendly than just the kind of here's a description. It's like, come meet the product. It's more like being in an actual shop and having that experience. And I know it's only three words, but their whole tone of voice flows around that. So it's not just those three words. It's everything they do. The fact they call this a puffer, and then underneath have what Rob and I would refer to as the SEO title, which is the women's long puffer jacket. But the actual name of the product is Cloud Shell Long Puffer. And that's them putting their brand tone on there whilst not ignoring what you've typed into Google to find this product. They've also then got the size and fit and the size guide as well, which I think is quite powerful. Having two different guides, when you're spending this kind of money online, there's that nervousness. Am I going to get the right one? Is it going to be the right size? So having a look at those two guides and the guides themselves, if you ever get a chance to go on the Tentree website, I've had them on the podcast in the past, and they're absolutely brilliant. They plant trees, you know, which won't shock you for every product that you buy from them. They're really cool brands. If I then scroll down, I then get this pairs. So it pairs with is what they've called it. So it's only got one item there, but this jacket goes really nicely over this outfit. If I click back, you can see she's actually wearing that same outfit that this other lady is wearing with the pairs with. It's a really nice connection actually to say, look, that's the same outfit with the jacket on. That's the same outfit with the jacket off. So you might want to go and buy the other stuff as well. So AOV, average order value, we want to increase that by getting to buy more than one product or basically spending more per order. So that, again, is quite a powerful thing, I think. We think you may also like, most of us have this on the site. This is good, but I've got a comment later about AI. And actually what you could do is you could power this from an AI engine, which means it will decide based on what people actually click on, what people actually purchase. And if that same AI engine is on lots of websites, it'll know something about this user that's coming because it would have seen that same person on other websites. So it'll know if they like to buy more premium products, less premium products. It'll know if they've been shopping coats a lot recently and haven't purchased one yet. So it might recommend some more coats on your website, or it might go, you keep looking for coats and buying other stuff. So we'll recommend one coat on the left because you're looking at a coat right now, and then some other general winter stuff like some leggings or a nice juniper hoodie as well, which is cool. So again, increase average order value. You might want to buy this instead. You might not think about buying this jacket. You might buy one of these products, or ideally you buy both. And so we've now got a higher average order value. And here we are, the sustainability. So 10.5 million tons goes into the trash every year from the apparel industry. I always use the phrase like, you can't unhear certain things. And once you hear that, that's changed your bar on every website you're now shopping on. And that's a powerful message if you as a business are able to change the world with what you're doing and be more sustainable. Again, it's another reason to buy from these guys. I love this as well. It tends to be more sort of small startup websites, but I think bigger brands that people, or bigger businesses and brands that people haven't heard of yet, I think having an also seen in is quite powerful. Because then if you click on one of those, which I didn't, but it could go through to the actual article in Bloomberg, for example, talking about how many trees they've planted, and do an interview or some drone videos of the forests. They've literally built forests, these guys, through the work they've been doing. And also signing up to the newsletter, again, the brand tone of voice, they call it a puffer, et cetera, et cetera. But the brand tone of voice here is join the movement, not sign up for exclusive offers. And it does say get 10% off on your planting journey. It's called All About Planting Trees. So again, you see how they put a really nice tone of voice on. It goes back to what Rob was saying as well about talk to your customers, and it's all relevant to who those guys are. And then they have this in the footer as well, which is their, these guys, they don't link to these four resources, but I'd recommend doing that. Link and get it to open in a new tab. So if anyone ever clicks on it, it's like, actually, yeah, here is our climate neutral certified page on the climate neutral certification website, which is a really powerful message, actually. Certainly, if you are interested in sorting the planet out, which we all should be as consumers. Awesome. Right. Another example then. So Karen Finch, who again was one of the top Shopify stores of the year. I think it was this year, which they won an award from Shopify. So here are some jeans on the left-hand side. Pretty sure I'm looking at everything on desktop as well. The mobile pages are very similar to these. They're very well laid out. And you should really be doing stuff mobile first if you've got more mobile traffic than desktop, which most of the kind of UK, US, where I think most of our attendees are from, most of us are shopping on mobiles these days. But yeah, these guys, they have the size and colors clearly outlined with the actual color on the palette. So you see where it's got black, and we've highlighted the black one. There's a navy one next to it. But if they had a red one, there would be a little red circle. So quite a nice way actually of laying out the colors. So you can see those. There's multiple images visible on desktop at all times. So actually the user can absorb more information. Let's let the imagery of the product sell the product and get people to want to buy it, because you're going to be wearing it. So the more shots of the product, the more you engage with it without having to kind of click through a carousel, the better. And similar to the last site as well, is when we scroll down, which I think I've got on the next slide, you'll see that those images on the left slide with the whole page. So actually you go through about 10 images before you get to the bottom of the images and right-hand side copy, which is quite smart. If you don't believe me, go on their site and have a quick play. Interest-free payment options as well. They've obviously realized that it's an important thing for their customers, which is why they've included it. And if you're paying $195 for a pair of jeans, to some customers, yeah, fine, I'll buy those. You click it, you add to cart, and you purchase it and pay in full. To other customers, this is a luxury item. It's a special item. And that might be part of a bigger, wider strategy for these guys, actually, of trying to get customers that don't tend to buy premium products like this to buy premium products and make them more accessible to increase their overall reach with those. So again, as we scroll down, you see the images are scrolling on the left-hand side. So I'm not having to do anything apart from just scroll naturally top to bottom on the page, which we're all experts at now, thanks to Instagram and TikTok. So be scrolling through, and on the right-hand side there, we've also got these highlights, which are quite cool. And they're in a little box that says like that this is 9.5-ounce cone denim. If you don't know what that is, it tells you on the website what that is, and you can read more information about it on their website. Slim tapered fit, again, don't know what that is. It'll educate you about that. Made in the USA, we all know what that means, which is awesome. So you know it's made locally in the USA. Sweet. And then there's four drop-downs with further information. We'll go on the next one. Again, these guys have a pairing option, and I love the way they've laid this out. So these jeans are paired with this jacket, this shirt, and this belt. So you can very, very quickly just select your size and add it to cart, or you can click on the product and go through. So you see how this buying experience is like walking in a store where it's like, are you looking for a whole outfit today, sir, or just a pair of jeans? Just a pair of jeans. Oh, look, I bought a whole outfit because the salesperson was brilliant and they found me a matching belt. And actually, you know, what color belts have you got at the moment? Oh, I've only got brown. Well, black really suits these jeans, actually. And it will suit your, certainly suit your skin tone and your hair color and your eye color and all the other things that designers look at. So you're trying to bring that experience into play. The paired with increases average order value, which is super important. Manufacturing in the USA, so it's a bit of the brand story. You'll find, going back to my question about where do people land, all Google Shopping traffic lands on product pages. Every single click on Google Shopping lands on a product page. So if the product page tells the user something about the brand, you've ticked the first box of, do I trust these guys? Do I understand who these guys are? And obviously it has to be good. If it's not good, you're going to do the opposite effect of losing the trust. You know, if you say we just import whatever we feel like from another country and just bang, sell it all. We just sell what sells. Nope, we've got a brand story. We've got a real customer message by this, which is super important. I've just seen a question pop in from George. George, I'll cover that in a second. It's a really, really
good
question.
That's a really question. Good question. Yeah.
Really good question. And yeah, I mentioned it very briefly earlier, so we'll talk about that in a minute. So yeah, last couple of bits on this then. So the black over dye, so it's a deep colouring technique. So it shows you actually how they've coloured these jeans and actually starts to answer that question of, well, the customer question, why are they worth $199? Like, I can buy a pair of jeans for $10 in another store. So why would I spend $199 versus $10? Well, that's a reason to buy them actually is, I love your brand story. They're going to last well. They suit other things I'm going to buy. And actually, I'm starting to learn how you guys have made these and why that's better than buying a normal pair of black jeans. Or say normal, a cheaper pair. And then these guys, again, like we had a thing at the top and we had it the same on Tentree as well. Finding your fit. I think that's one of the biggest barriers to entry, certainly with clothing online, same with furniture and same with a lot of other products that you might want to buy is we need to bring that whole message across of you're basically in the store, touching the product, feeling the product, smelling the product, if it's food or drink based. And even with that, it's how can you make that sensory appeal come across on a web page? And like Rob was saying, if we use an A/B testing tool, you can show half, it doesn't have to be half, but you can say a set of your customers can see the old, the current live version, and a set of your customers can see the new version and see if they convert better with some of our new imagery and some of our new content. Lovely. And then finally as well, this is in the footer. So quite often that box on the left-hand side, the free shipping and exchanges, quite often that would say something quite selfish, like go and sign up to our newsletter to get exclusive offers. Some of that. But no, these guys have gone down the road of another USP, free shipping and exchanges. So if you're not happy, you spend $95 on our site, which is not, it's not difficult, sorry, to spend that on this site with this price of product. A quick one that I've not listed in here, but I'm going to cover it quickly on this. We've worked with quite a few clients on what is the barrier to entry for free delivery. And we found with clients, some clients, you keep increasing it and it has no effect on conversion rate, which is great because now we're charging some people for delivery, which we weren't before. And people don't seem to mind that. That's cool. Other brands, we find it actually does push the average order value up because you go, okay, my average order value is $100 right now. So actually, I'm going to say you have to spend $120 to get free delivery. And suddenly the average order value pumps up to like 110, 115. Pump it up a bit more, it goes up a bit more. But you'll find a sweet spot. You pump it up more and it starts to come down again, the average order value. Because it's like free delivery is just out of reach now. So I'm not adding that extra little product. And actually, if you can recommend a product, which I've got some slides in a minute, in the cart, so which would allow people to qualify free delivery, and say, add this product because then you will be qualified for free delivery. It's quite a compelling message. So it's like you're going to have to pay $10 for delivery, but if you pay $15 for this product, you get free delivery and you get another product. So it's quite a good trade-off, actually. It's quite a good negotiation to have through the webpage. So, and it also mentions the international delivery as well is lower if you spend $95 than it is if you spend under $95. Sweet. So before we dive into cross sales and upsells, I'm going to cover this question from George. So the question is, by outlining a lot of information to customers, does that not hurt user accessibility? Now, George, I'm going to give you a slight politician's answer on this, but I'm going to give you some examples on it. The politician's answer is it depends. Depends on your customer and test it and see what works. The testing bit is fundamentally the most important thing. We have some clients that one in particular who use, I think might be tuning in right now actually, uses the phrase lift and shift. And that means that when someone lands on a collection or product page, we want to make sure the add to basket button is as close as possible and get them through the cart. And we can email them later, build lifetime value later. We can do all of that, but we've got to get that first purchase in. And they've analyzed the whole life cycle of a customer through all their different purchases that they'll make. and highlighted that first one's really difficult. So just get them in, which kind of trumps some of the things we're saying about average order value, but doesn't trump what we're saying about conversion rate optimization. We need that conversion rate to be as high as possible, especially for new customers. Now, I get your point, George. And I think actually, if you put the wrong information in and you start adding the wrong things, which you kind of don't know if you don't ask customers and test stuff. But yeah, if you were to start putting the wrong things in, then absolutely, it would adding too much would hurt overall usability. Your conversion rate would suffer. What you don't want to do is make it too complicated. So where we've stumbled a little bit with our clients, where we're doing bits of CRO to try and get our PPC or SEO conversion rate to increase, we've stumbled a little bit where we said to a client, we think you should do this. And they said, yeah, it makes sense. It's a really good idea. Then they've implemented it and there's been a lack of communication from us asking how it's going, them telling us how it's going, the design stage and the implementation stage. We then look at it and it's like, you know, we have the kind of what I call the UX sick bucket, where we throw up and go like, actually, that looks awful. That's the opposite of what we wanted. And now you've actually, you know, you've moved stuff around the site. You've put that as the most important thing. So I now have to scroll down to even find the price in one situation with one client. So I think the way things are implemented is really, really important, which is why it's important to have a good UX designer who understands conversion rate, understands your brand and who they're selling to, and kind of couples all of that together. So I know it's a bit of a politician's answer, but I hope that gives a bit more context as to how to answer that question of how much information is too much and how much is not enough. So I hope that helps. But chuck's another question if you want, George, or anybody else on that. We'll we can certainly towards the end do a bit more on it, or maybe put up some live examples of where too much is actually happened, and or the way it's been implemented has been not so good. And obviously, we're not going to call out any of our clients saying when it's not been so good. Lovely. So we've convinced more people to add to cart. Now what we want to do is get them to add more to their cart, so more than a single item, or whatever the average is right now. It's all about a law of averages. So if on average people are adding, say, two items to cart, how do we get to five? You know, we set a stupid target. And, you know, if you don't set a big target, you're never going to hit one. So let's go for it. So probably Bruvy, given that it's a brew, it's a cup of coffee, which we call brew in the UK. But when I first read it, it looked like Bruvy. But these guys, they've done a product page upsell. So I'm looking at a capsule of coffee, which if I jump ahead to the next slide, this capsule of coffee is 20 capsules. It's going to cost us $23. I'll come on to that in a minute. $23 or $29. So it gives you an idea what it is. But there's that little pop-up at the bottom right, which probably works incredibly well for these guys. It's got a code, HOLIDEAL, which is obviously a holiday deal. £120 if you get the whole bundle of products, which is quite exciting. So they, even though I'm looking at a product that's worth $29 here, it's like, get the whole bundle. Oh, I wonder what the bundle is. And you can just click that button. It adds your whole bundle to cart, auto applies a discount. So you can add them to cart and see what is included in that bundle. But you see how quickly we've gone from $29 product, $120 product. It's a massive increase in average order value. So I'm not going to share the stats on how well it's working, obviously, because that's all going to be confidential to this brand. But I think it's quite powerful having that bundling message there. And I've got some other bundling examples in a second as well. But also you see that top bar where it says save an extra $120 with the code HOLIDEAL, which is the bundle options. If you click that, it goes to the bundle option. That swishes across and there's several messages that go through there. And there's another one as well that says check out the bundle. One of them just says save $120. There are some other top messages in there as well that they're rolling through. So that's not the only one they're trying to push. But this, your question actually, George, is really relevant to this. You could have way too many offers. If you land on a site and it's like half price this, two for the price of one on this, and then buy three, get a fourth one free on this, and then 50%, it's just too much. It's too one thing at a time, I think, is really, really key. And what you might actually be able to do is get an AI tool that could decide which offer to put in front of people based on what they're looking at, what they're browsing, et cetera, et cetera. So you might hold back the offer appearing. So they've been on the website for 30, 40 seconds or a couple of minutes, or they visited three pages. And then you can give them a relevant one of your offers to try and hook them in for that first purchase. They've then got this, which is quite cool. And they're not the only people that do this. It's quite common, but very clever, I think. And one of the challenges with it being quite common is it's no longer very unique because everybody starts to do it. I can't remember the last time I saw a coffee brand online that doesn't have some sort of subscribe and save offer, but it is really powerful, isn't it? Because you kind of look at that and go, do you know what? I get, it goes from $29, which is basically 30, to 23, which is basically 20. That's the psychology. That's what the customer's thinking then of like, oh, I'm actually saving like nearly a third, even though it's actually 20%, but I'm saving, which is nearly half, but I'm saving nearly a third because they've used clever numbers in the actual pricing model here. The delivery, if you go 2 weeks, 4 weeks, 8 weeks, 12 weeks, it doesn't change on this site, but it could. You could say, actually, if you order it every 2 weeks, it'd be $20. If you order it every 12 weeks, it's $25. And you kind of have this little scale of the more frequently you order our coffee, the more regularly you drink it, the cheaper it is. and we'll give you a reward for that. You get free delivery when it's $59. And the interesting thing about that as well is if I add this to cart, that actual message underneath these two buttons here that says you are $59 away from free shipping, that starts to come down. So if I add one, it will add $29, it will say you are $30 away from free shipping. All right, I'll add another one. You are now $1 away from free shipping. All right, I need to find a $1 product, don't I? Because I don't want to pay for shipping. Because it's called gamification, where we're almost gamifying it, making it a game of how much can you get in your cart and how much you're going to purchase. So that's quite cool. But yeah, middle point, they're focused more on the frequency rather than should I buy it or not. Again, it's like that John Lewis example of the comparisons just on their normal category pages, which is quite cool. And then this one as well, I like this. It's delivered to your door, free standard delivery over £45. This is an example from Gymshark. And then you also get free express delivery once you spend £100, which is quite cool. So even when you're like, wow, qualify free delivery, then round two of the game starts, which is how you're going to get free express delivery. And I bet you they didn't get out of bed in one morning and make up the £45 and the £100. They would have spent a lot of time testing that. So what an A-B test, they might have gone, let's do free delivery over £30, £40, £50, £60, all the way up to £150. Let's do a whole load of tests and see which one is most conclusive. And obviously Gymshark have a lot of site traffic, so or compared to most, it's all relative. But they'll have a lot of site traffic, so they'll have enough traffic to run a test like that very, very quickly, and maybe even have version A still running to like 80% of their audience, and then 20% getting one of those 20 or 30 different variations of it to see which one's most powerful, which one gets the best average order value, what does it do to conversion rate. And like Rob was showing earlier, a lot of the A-B testing tools will give you that information as you go. Awesome. So Mamas and Papas. So these guys have a really cool thing, actually, where I'm looking at a single push chair. So they're not very big in the US, but they're quite big in the UK, these guys. So any of our UK guests will be quite familiar that you can buy push chairs from them, amongst a whole load of other stuff. But this push chair costs £699. But you see immediately, you're like, hang on a minute, the four-piece bundle then goes from £699 to £759. That's only £60 more, but I get a lot more for my money. Like a lot more for my money. So that's quite interesting, actually. And if I pay £60, I save £177. So that's quite compelling. And it goes all the way up to the £1,200 bundle as well. So you can kind of click them. And as you click them, the image on the left and all the information changes to show you what's included in that bundle. The page adapts to the one that you're currently looking to put into your cart. So most people buy bundles naturally, because an extra £60 when you spend, you know, it's less than 10% more, but you save £172. Plus you get in, I think it's a car seat and a few other bits and pieces that starts to come with it as well, which is really cool. And who doesn't love their baby? So there's also an emotive element in all of this as well. Lovely. Moon Magic. So we're going to move on to 2B now, which is the basket upsells. This is really common. And Moon Magic do it quite well. Loads of sites do this, which is where on the right-hand side, you see we've got these you may also like. There's loads of other products you can swish through there. A lot of these are recommended. I checked the code of their website and it's using an AI tool. It's recommending products based on the AI engine. There is an AI engine watching what people do, assessing how effective this product is versus that one, versus that one, versus that one, when I recommend those, or what people put in their cart to see what works. And you can see at the top, it also says that they've earned free shipping, which is quite cool. But yeah, recommending stuff at cart is just an absolute no-brainer. It's one of the fastest ways to get someone to go, right, I'm buying this product, I'm going to add that one as well. We use a tool quite a lot. There's quite a lot of them. Our favorite one is Nosto. Nosto is an AI engine that can do lots of different things, and one of them is product recommendations. And so if you use that feature, you can whack it in here, you can put that on the product pages like we saw earlier. I'm looking at a jacket, you might also be interested in some leggings and some shoes and some other stuff. You can basically put that widget on a Shopify store or a Magento store. You put that widget wherever you want and it just starts doing its thing. It starts learning, starts adapting, and starts testing different bits and pieces. So the other thing you can do on these as well is is those two products I've got in my cart. I've got two of the first one and one of the second one. I can add more quantity in cart. It sounds mad, but loads of sites don't have that, which sounds bizarre to me, because it's easy enough to go like, you know what, I might buy two of those actually. Or now I've got a few, especially people that got three or four items in their cart or 10 different items. She might buy two or three of those. You know, I might be buying several Christmas presents here. Let's add a few as we go through. And again, test. Might not work for your brand, might work really well. You might have a brand where people only buy one product. So you're more focused on how do I get them to just buy that product. As soon as it's in the cart, you need to decide if you want to try and get them to replace it with a more expensive product or just get them through the cart. Just buy the bloody thing and we'll talk later. Is the thing, you know, meet you after the till, honey, is the phrase. Lovely. Wayfair, Wayfair is obviously a massive furniture marketplace. But this is quite cool. So I've got this lamp, this floor lamp in my basket, got the shopping assistance and return policy. And then it's actually said, you might need a bulb for your lamp. And anyone who's looking at it might notice that actually it's a set of two. It's trying to give me not a set of one. So a set of two, because I probably put it the only lamp in the room. So I've probably got another lamp on the bulbs to match. So it's one tone of lighting in the whole room. And also it's, it's £14 for that bulb, which is quite a lot for a light bulb. But you might think, whatever, I'm buying a lamp. It's a nice lamp and I want a really good bulb to go in there. You're recommending that one. I'll take your word for it and then add it to basket, which means the basket value has just gone from £46.99. It's gone up by another 14 quid. So 60 quid we're looking at now, which is quite exciting. So a quid means a pound in the UK for anyone who's listening in the US. Lovely. Gymshark, minimalist in the design and the amount of stuff. So again, go back to your question, George. This is a good way where they've probably tested thousands of things. And these are the two that they've ended up with in their basket. So they've got that free standard shipping at the top right of the screen, which has got a little loading bar and it's got a green bar. And then this particular basket, I'm only £5 away from express shipping as well, which is quite smart. And then you've got the You May Also Like, which is driven by an AI engine. So it might be that actually the two products I'm buying there on the right-hand side, which is a tank top and what's that? Some shorts as well. So some guys' shorts and a women's tank top. Because of that, I tried to put in two very different items for for obviously male and female to try and see what it would chuck out. And it's offered some socks, a gym bottle and a bag, which is interesting because it's pretty much suggesting I'm a guy. Because those three products, which I checked that all three of them were for guys. So I'm wondering how much it knows that I'm a guy, even though I've just added the women's product to my basket as well. Maybe it's because I added that one first. So the AI engine is trying to preempt who I am and what I'm therefore trying to buy, which is quite cool. So I'd say AI engines, fantastic, this kind of thing. Now, Waitrose is a British supermarket. I think supermarkets have absolutely nailed the checkout journey more than a lot of e-commerce stores, which I think is quite cool. So this one, and this is actually my basket as well. This isn't a screenshot I found in Google Images. So judge me as you will. I'm trying to get my team more healthy here at Spec. So there we go. We've got mango, hot mango immunity shots, J2Os, bananas, and more fruit shots. You know, we're trying to keep the team alive as long as possible because they're brilliant. So this one is my missed favorites. So this is stuff I have bought recently, but haven't put into my cart. Now, normally on a site, you know, favorites and wish list, I, as a user, would have gone through and actually ticked those things to add them into my wish list, into my Waitrose has made it up. Waitrose has made me a favorites wish list automatically based on what I've bought previously, which is quite powerful. So we're not waiting for the user to use it. We're telling you you're using it and we made it for you, which is quite cool. And they've all got a little green heart, which is which is Waitrose branding, but it looks like I've added them to a wish list, but I haven't. This is just what I bought previously, but hadn't put in my basket this time. Then the next one, so complete your offers. So actually in the checkout part of your website, you could say to users, you've added this product, which is part of a bundle, but you haven't added the bundle. Because you might not be aware of that because you might have just been going down the collection or category using the quick add buttons. So you might not know this product's part of a bundle. You might not know it's part of an offer. You might not know that it's buy four and get the fifth one free or whatever. So this stuff here, yeah, I can't remember if I actually went through and did this order offer or not, but that's quite powerful as well. I'm going to come back to your question in a minute, George, about overloading information because there's a lot to go through in the checkout there. But you can see there, we've got four stages, missed favorites, missed offers before you go and check out. So supermarkets, you obviously have to work quite hard with your food meal plan and your shop and get it all into your basket before you check out. So actually supermarkets have a bit of an advantage here where they have a bit more of a captive audience. If you're actually in the supermarket itself, you filled a trolley or a basket with stuff, you're queuing at the checkout, they always have all the best offers. You know, chuck in some chewing gum for the car, get an advent calendar, buy that pot plant you've always wanted and you've never actually even thought about pot plants, but there's some at the till, or some batteries. We all seem to have batteries in the UK. Buy some batteries to put in your devices. They have a bit more of a captive audience. On a website, we don't have the same sort of thing. So I think these two in particular, so the missed favorites and complete your offers, we've got to be really careful that, going back to your question, George, about overloading the UX and the interface with information, I wouldn't expect to find both of these outside of a supermarket website within reason. Maybe a sofa or something quite, or a car or something I'm ordering, something quite expensive, I'd expect to find quite a lot of these. But certainly if I was buying a t-shirt and you started going through this, I'm gone. And so would most users. So I think one of these things is not a bad idea. Or when you go into the checkout, it's like you're putting your payment information in the one side of the page. The other side of the page has got your basket at the moment. So the items you're buying, that's a good point to have a little bit of text that might come up on a few of them saying like, you know, complete the bundle. And they might go, oh, I don't know if it's a part of a bundle or there's an offer on that product. And you click and it takes you back into the site. You can add the other one and then go back into checkout. So that lift and shift is still present. That quick, just checkout, buy the thing is still there. But the you're not taking them away from the checkout. So this is cool. So this is on the right-hand side, we called it Order Rescue. That is the name of an app, which we mentioned Richard Chappell earlier on. We had him on last week. He used to be part of Gymshark. He also was the CMO of Play.com back in the day, which is now owned by Rakuten or whatever you want to call them, the film rental place I know them as, but they do a lot more than just that. Have their own TV channel and everything. But he's part of a thing called Growth Foundation. They've made this app for Shopify called Order Rescue. And they have loads of the merchants, the people they work with in Growth Foundation using it. It's called Order Rescue. And what it does is if someone gets to the car and they don't have a discount code that already in the car, it searches through all the discount codes on Shopify and puts one in for that user, which obviously increases the chance of checkout dramatically, absolutely dramatically. So the stats they were looking at is 8% of checkout users try discount codes that don't work. So potentially you've got as far as getting them all the stuff we've just spoken about. You've nailed it. They've got into the checkout and 8% of those people are going to go and look for a discount code quickly. And then the discount codes they tried to use don't work. So how sad is it that you've paid for all of that advertising, get them in the site, you've done all your CRO work, you've invested millions in your brand, your website, et cetera. Then they get to the checkout, they try the discount codes, they're not working and they leave. That is an absolute disaster. You've done all the hard work. It's like in football, getting as far as the goalkeeper falls the wrong way and leaves you a massive gap and you miss. And you're there, you've got to tap the ball and in it goes and you completely miss the goal. That is what's happening in your checkout. So Order Rescue automatically applies the discount code and the average conversion rate increase of 2.5%. That's 2.5% of the total site traffic. So like Rob was quoting earlier, a conversion rate of between 2 and 3%. So say you're at 2%, you add this and you go up to 4.5%. Obviously, it's an average increase that they've achieved. But that is fantastic. So talk to us if you want to get a free report from those guys. Drop us a note with your email address and we can organize something. And there it is on the left-hand side where you can see it's automatically adding this Henry 10 into those. And this one's really interesting. We do this with clients quite a lot. How many people have filled in their email address and got like your welcome offer, like an email that says, here's your discount code, 15% of your first order. Compare how many people have received it to how many people have actually used it. Because loads of people receive it and don't actually use it when they get to the checkout. Now, in one sense, that's great news because that means they've still checked out at full value. They've not used their discount. In another sense, it means that actually some of those people or some people who didn't check out in the end might have wanted to use it or got there and didn't see that there was a code on the email. So actually, when they get the email, if you can have a button that says, you know, start shopping now, or as soon as they put their email address in, it's verified and it goes through, you can automatically apply the discount code to the cart on your site. You don't just have to use the Order Rescue app as well. There's other ways of doing that. If it happens automatically, they get the discount. You dramatically increase the chance of getting a sale from that person, which is super exciting. And then I think there's a final bit from me. They've already bought from you. I've got a couple of slides on this quickly. Post-purchase. I love these examples. These are actually on a demo store. So I'm taking this from a demo store rather than being a real store. But you can see the examples, which I've outlined in red on the right-hand side. So reorder for 15% off. So you've just bought this product. Do you want to reorder it to get a 30% off your second, well, 50%, I'm sorry, a second one if you want more than one pot plant of the lovely Groot from Marvel, who, don't we all love him? He's got his own little series on Disney Plus now. And then the one on the left as well is the 30% off if you buy in the next 10 minutes. So they've confirmed their order, but they're saying, if you want to add anything else now, we'll give you a 30% off discount code to do it. And it's the discount code there is take 30 off. You could also, if you use the right app on Shopify, the right plugin on Magento or Hybris, whatever site you're using, you could also make that specific to this user. You could even say your order number, for example, is going to be a discount code for the next 30 minutes or the next 10 minutes. So you have 30% off anything you want on the store for the next 30 minutes only. Go and get it. And you click apply discount. And that's automatically applied the discount code. Just go and choose your products now and you get 30% off, which again is really powerful to get a second order. And especially if they do it really quickly on either of these things, you can just send all the products out in one single order, But that one order now could have doubled, tripled, quadrupled in value, which is a really powerful way of doing it. So we're still kind of focusing on that lift and shift method, getting through the cart, and then bang, do you want to get something else as well while you're here? This is really powerful thinking longer term now than just that first day, that first order. It's like, cool, we've done our thing. See you later. Product will be in the post shortly. How did you hear from us? These guys are asking a quick question with a drop down. There's loads of other questions you could ask here as well. Did you find everything you wanted? Was there any product you couldn't find? Is there anything you think we could improve on our store? Was there anything frustrating about our store? It's like Rob said right at the start, if you ask customers, this is a really good way to do it. They've just been through that journey. It's fresh of mind. It's take 2 seconds for them to do. The more you start to build engagement, once you've got their email address or once they've purchased from you or whatever, once you start to build that engagement from people, the chance of them coming back and buying a second time from you is dramatically increased. Because now you've had a bit of a conversation as well as them shopping on your store. That conversation is the same reason that, and I'll shout them out, our local coffee shop. So these guys do the best coffee in Leatherhead in Surrey, where we're based in the UK. But it's because whenever I go in, I have a conversation with them. You know, they even gave us, I wasn't even there, one of my team went, they gave us some little gold chocolates, which was fantastic. This is one way you can start to build that conversation with people. You could do it over email as well, you send out a survey afterwards. And I put smart questions can increase the lifetime value as well. So a smart question might say something like, you might ask people like, what was one of the best things about our product? Why do you love our brand? Or this is the third time you've ordered from us. And we know that because we've got your email address on, you know, in our store, because we see your email address pop up for a third time. Why do you keep coming back? What do you love about us? Which now means you're getting them to focus on the things they love about you, which is great. Have you ever told any friends about us? You know, if it's their fifth purchase, have you ever told any friends about our products? With a thing saying like, you know, here's a code that your friend gets £30 or 30% off their first order, plus you get 30% off your next order as well. So you both get a reward for referring them, and you're asking a lifetime important customer while they're engaged with their brand, once they've already finished the thing you want them to, which is to go and place an order. So, right, final comments. These are some other things I wanted to include that I think are really powerful. And this involves people actually going on Google and looking for things. One of the most searched keywords we see alongside the brand name, so say you were Gymshark, so the word Gymshark as a search term on Google. So people going on Google and typing in Gymshark search. One of the biggest things next to that is always discount codes. So if you were to look at the data on Gymshark, it's probably Gymshark discount codes, Gymshark offer codes, Gymshark discounts, etc. So if you create a page on your website called that, you're probably going to rank number one, because Gymshark have got the highest authority on the word Gymshark over all sites. So get people to come back to your website to see what your current offers and sales are, rather than, and I put this about affiliates, rather than going to like a cashback site or something, clicking through there to get the cashback, and then you're having to give a percentage of that sale to the cashback site. The way they found you in the first place was Meta ads or Google ads or something, which you've also paid for, SEO, which has cost you and all your audience lots and lots of money, etc. To make that work. I put in italics as well. If you don't do offers, you don't do discounts. Like I said right at the start, like some of our clients probably shouldn't have over Black Friday, and some just didn't. And it worked. And when the ones that didn't work really well, the ones that did, some worked well. Some actually saw a drop in ROI, even with discounts on, which was quite interesting, and dropping conversion. But someone's having a page that just says like, we don't do discounts. And if you think our product's not worth the money, come talk to us. We want to have a conversation, and then we might give you something anyway. So come and do that. Second one as well is people often search, like, again, using Gymshark, search Gymshark reviews. So if Gymshark have a page on their website where it collates all of the different review platforms, everything, anything a customer's ever said about them, from social media platforms to review sites, etc., whack all of that on a page called Gymshark Reviews on the Gymshark site. People come to that page rather than then having to dig through like FIFO, Trustpilot, Yotpo, et cetera, et cetera, and find all the different ones. And final comment as well, like I keep coming back to this, know your customer, talk to them, find out what they're interested in, what they want to buy from you, what they want to ask you, what questions they're interested in, et cetera, et cetera. It's probably one of the most important things, but thank you. I didn't change the second line, but yeah, if you want to work with us, look forward to starting on Monday. But feel free to reach out to us if you want a copy of the slides. If you want a copy of the video, let us know. We're going to put them all up on YouTube. So it's called Winning with Shopify, shameless plug. It's our podcast that I host. We post every week. So if you want to come check that out as well, quite a few of the guests we have on our webinars, including these guys, Saguna. I'm wearing the t-shirt today. It's a lovely t-shirt they sent me, but Saguna sponsored it. They're an email platform. But come check out the podcast. We can send those out. We can send out a copy of the slides as well if you want to. As one of our guests last week, who we know very well, who is one of our clients, said, can I get a copy of the recording so I can play it on loudspeaker over and over again to my entire team so they can start doing what I keep telling them to do. That's it from me. I hope it's been useful. Rob,
there was one question. Yeah, there was one question that came through, Nick. That was George again. Got some great ideas. Thanks for joining today, George. What is your opinion when e-commerce stores use discount banners on their homepage, but in order to get the discount, you have to download the web app of the store? You got to do this to get this sort of scenario.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I think the one of the most important things when trying to get people to download something, I think, can be really, really difficult to try and understand whether a user would or wouldn't do that. So again, George, I'm going to use the diplomatic art, so you can test it. I think it's a really high barrier to entry, in my opinion. And it's my opinion of 15 years experience and trying to actually get that to work for some brands, I think it's been really difficult. A lot of brands use it as like an afterthought. So I know ASOS, as seen on screen, the clothing marketplace, those guys are quite hot actually on, they've got an amazing app and I don't know if they still got it now. I'm not a user of it anymore, but I used to use them quite a lot. They used to have an app where you could actually choose a product and some AI would show someone wearing that, walking down a catwalk and then kind of turn around and walk back, whatever the item was. And that was really powerful, but you could only do that in the app. So they focused on trying to get people to make that first conversion through the website as a completely normal, like all the examples I've been showing today, do it through the website. And then once you've gone through the web journey doing that, then they would send an email afterwards and say, why don't you download our app and start outlining some of those features, and especially to people that have made like 3 or 4 purchases and had never logged into the app. That's a really good time to do that. The thing I would even challenge ASOS with actually is to say, and I assume they must have the answer to this, but if you must have a certain level of customer base that use the app, or the app's completely pointless. Like, there's no point trying to force people to download the web app or an iPhone or Android app or something, or engage with any kind of app and download something to an actual device. There's no point trying to do that and trying to force people to do that if they're not willing to do that. I think we need to be really, really clear on what customers do and don't want to do. But also, again, going back to like not ignoring the silent majority, just because everybody who replied to your question says, no, I wouldn't be willing to download that, doesn't mean people won't download it. And actually doesn't mean you can't do something to incentivize or to force people to download it. But again, there's so many parts to the onion of like, you know, what benefit is it to you as a business having them downloading a web app or downloading an iPhone app or something, rather than just logging into the web app in a browser and using it that way. If it's actually impossible for them to use the product through the browser and they have to download something, well, then it's kind of non-optional, isn't it? Which I think is a good idea.
Yeah, absolutely. There is one more that's come through. If I make multiple CRO changes at once, how do I know what's working and what's not?
Do you want to take that one, Rob? I mean, you've been playing with the AB platforms a little bit as well.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, we did mention at the very beginning that there's sort of a more expensive way of doing it and a cheaper way of doing it. If you do have sort of budget behind your testing, then there's a lot of apps that will do split testing and measure the activity on both the original design or the original elements, and then compare that to the updated, the optimized design, to then make comparisons. And they try to do a pretty even split of users. And obviously it is quite difficult to understand, to get that split perfect between those that were intent on buying something anyway and those that were just coming to have a little shop around. But it does give you a bit of an idea. And there are ways that you can actually figure out how many people should we run through this test to get an accurate reading back out of it. If you don't have the budget to go into paying for an app, then the best thing to do is just do them one by one. So do small incremental changes, assess it, give it a decent amount of time, use something like Google Analytics to measure how much traffic's coming through those pages or through those changes that you've made, and making a note of it, tracking it, having a sort of a optimization tracker. We love a tracker here at Spec, and actually just recording it, each week. How's that improved? Has it made any changes? Do we need to go back and make some assessments? Doing some QA really with the rest of the team.
Yeah, I think the only, I completely agree with everything you said, Rob, but the only thing I think I would add on that is just to say that when you're coming up with like the hypothesis, like what we're going to test, what we're going to change to see what it does, I think a really important thing to think about is also how we're going to measure it. So give you a good example. We have quite a lot of clients that put wish lists on there, like, and we spoke a little bit about them earlier. So you can put a load of products into your wish list, chuck your email in, and it saves your wish list. The challenge with that is you can then look at, well, sorry, not the challenge, but the good thing about that, you can look at how many people then have visited, you know, your website.com/wishlist and how many people have actually engaged with it afterwards. Now, this really is a chicken and egg situation, and it can make a lot of people in brands cry when you put loads of time and energy in something you get really passionate about. You know, it's better than sliced bread. This thing's going to be amazing. Our conversion rate's going to quadruple. We're all going to be, you know, made redundant and retired and very rich very quickly. And then you launch something, it doesn't work. And we've got to be ready for that. We've got to be ready for that as marketeers. We've got to think, like, how are we going to respond when it doesn't work? But I think, like, the wish list example of going, like, okay, if we made it work in a certain way, like have its own URL when you want to see what's in your wish list, we can actually see how many people have visited that URL, which is, like you just said, Rob, on Google Analytics. So there are ways you can make it quite simple without using a platform. I think the advantage of using a platform, like you say, Rob, is some of them you can, which the ones that cost more, you can log in and actually, like, drag stuff around the screen or change the you know, change all the text on a page and just click a button and codes on that page. It will give version B to 50 people and it's connected to Google. It's got its own analytics platform, so it will work out which ones work better for you. But yeah, I think going back to the thing of, like, doing multiple tests, sometimes you just won't know. And sometimes time's not on your side either. You just got to go, do you know, it's 10 things we know are rubbish on our site, so we're just going to improve them on. Conversion's gone up. All right, sweet. Let's just move on. And so we often will only test the big stuff. Won't test the little things either.
Yeah, actually, speaking of time as well, that sort of ties into another of the questions as well. What is a good time frame for testing A/B options? And I think it's sort of, it's based on your traffic, your existing traffic, that if you're a website that's quite relatively low traffic, you want to make sure that you are getting enough people through that experience to understand if it's had an impact. Obviously, if you're getting sort of potentially hundreds of thousands of clicks per day or per week, then you can probably do that in a shorter space of time. But if you're only getting sort of maybe 500 clicks a month, perhaps, then you're going to want to make sure that you're running that test for at least a month to get that traffic through. So it is very dependent. That's for that was another anonymous one about a time frame. But yeah, I'd say varies based on your traffic. Yeah. We've had one come through from Natalia. You mentioned that we should calculate CVR using engaged traffic. Would this be just by removing bounce traffic from the calculation, or are there other ways of making sure traffic quality is relevant?
That's a very hot potato, isn't it? You mentioned at the start, Rob, about the engaged sessions, which Natalia, that's actually a metric in GA4. Which sounds great. The problem is it's in GA4, and and I'll say this publicly on here. I said it means we have a poster in the office that says "Rule one: Google are evil, thieving Watsits." That's one of our mottos, our non-public mottos, might I say. We don't put it on the website, I suspect. But yeah, you've got to be careful, because what Google classifies as an engaged session is probably not what you would. They don't just go, like, these people showed loads of great purchase intent. But then also, it's really difficult because so often the conversion visit to the website is why Rob was showing users, not sessions earlier. The engaged session where they actually buy the product is quite often like, I've been on the site 5 or 6 times now, or many times. I know exactly what I want. I'm just going to chuck it in the car. I might grab a couple of added extras on the way. I'm going to put the things I want in the car and just buy it. So the actual buying visit to the site sometimes is only like 2 or 3 minutes, which, like, 1 or 2 of those minutes you spend in, like, putting your details in and checking them all through, you know, my billing information, my delivery information, bang, it's going to arrive on this date. Yeah, let's go. So the engaged sessions in analytics, I certainly wouldn't take as gospel. I think what I would look for what I would classify as an engaged session on an e-commerce site is how many people have actually added to cart. You can actually make segmentations in GA4 to go, if someone's added to cart, put them in this segmentation. If they've not added to cart, put them over here. And people that have added to cart, you can add those audiences. You can integrate them into Google Ads or into Meta Ads, for example, and say, I am now going to start advertising to people that have added to cart but haven't purchased yet. Because the problem with retargeting is you're retargeting everyone, including the people that landed on your site, maybe by accident, maybe were sold something on an advert that they then landed there and it wasn't what they were expecting, or it's too expensive and they didn't know the price when they arrived. You don't want to start trying to get those guys back. They're already disengaged with you. So you want to get the guys back who are engaged. So I think what classifies as, like, an engaged user or engaged traffic, I think you as a business need to try and define that yourselves to go, okay, when people do X, we make Y. And that's the whole kind of lifetime value. It's the average order value. So I think understanding, you know, a really good place to do this would be in GA4, where you could see, it has a really good graph actually of, like, how many, well, if you set it up properly, is it set GA4 up properly? It's got an add to basket, then it's got how many people reached the checkout page, how many then completed a purchase, how many made a multiple purchase, as in bought a second or came and made a second or third or fourth order with you guys. So I love using that. Certainly, that's one of the main places I start, hence why I focus so much today on add to basket, go through checkout and post-purchase, or cross-sells and upsells as well. I focus so much on that because those are the areas I can see the data clearest in GA4. To get more people to engage pre-add to basket, that's like your whole marketing. It's your whole brand story. It's everything. So I thought today, to give you guys some good tips who are coming along here today, I thought it's probably easier just to focus on those bits where it's like in analytics, I can actually see how many people have added to basket, how many have gone through to checkout, how many have purchased. So it depends what you guys think, because well, how your business operates and what you think you know about your customers and what they tell you and what you see. If you're selling like a sofa or a bed or something that's going to be much more expensive, or a car, you need to actually think about how many visits people need to make to the site before they purchase. There's ways to find that out, but actually you might go and engage visit is just anyone over 2 minutes or anyone that's played with our product configurator. You know, like if you're buying a car, you can configure all the bits you want on it. You get to the end and then you think, oh, I can't afford that, but it's a lovely car. If you're anything like me, it looks like that anyway. But yeah, you can see you can configure your car. So anyone that plays with the configuration or gets to at least step 2 of 8 on the configuration, they're engaged. Whereas, so there's not like one blanket rule, because that would be very different for someone who's just selling compostable phone cases, which was one of our old clients. But yeah, those guys, it's going to be like, just get at least 3 in the cart and buy. An engaged user is only people that's added 2 or more products to cart because they don't cost very much. So it's kind of relevant, but you can certainly set up a goal and an event so they're not called goals anymore, events and conversions within GA4, or even a segmentation of people that have done that. So you can look at like engaged users versus not engaged. And then your marketing plan is, how do I get these guys engaged and how do I get more of the engaged people to actually purchase? You've shown some real engagement, you've not bought from us, and that's a problem. So we need to get many of you through the cart as we possibly can. But it's a very good question. Very good.
Yeah, thanks, Natalia. We'll take a couple more. There was one that was more of a statement, really, from Kieran. Why can't companies just be nicer and offer open discount without milking the users for data, information, and surveys? I think that's just the way it is in marketing. We want to get as much information out of the customer as possible. So we do need to appreciate that there are going to be some hoops that companies are going to want us to jump through to get those discount codes. And we have to play ball with that. I think based on the brand, and knowing your customer base, how many hoops or how big do those hoops need to be, or how low to the ground do those hoops need to be to actually, you know, not annoy your customer base and actually make sure that you're getting some sales. And we'll just take one more as well. Is there ever a good time of the year to test CRO changes? Oh, that's quite a good one. Should we be doing this pre-peak or post-peak?
I'd do it all the time, honestly. I'd plan slightly different tests through peak. And in fact, peak is a good time, I think, and this is a dangerous thing to say, but also it's not my money. It's often my clients' money we're spending, and it's their website and their decision and their loss if it goes wrong. You know, we have insurance though. But the thing I would say is during peak, if you do the right tests, for example, if you're building something quite big, quite comprehensive, it's got a big investment cost to actually develop and build it, and you want to sort of test it and see how it's going, well, during peak, you've got more traffic. And if it works, you've got the ability during peak and that A-B test to start ramping up the percentage of people that see the new version. So one of our clients, they often do like 5% of people see the new version, then up to 10, then 20, then 40, then 80, then, and they kind of roll it out to everybody. But that first 5% really is the testing 5%. So imagine this as a scenario. You do the first 5 or 10% test through September. Again, like Rob said, if you get enough traffic, if that's enough of a percentage, then you start to ramp it up a little bit as we get into October, we ramp up to 30% and we've made some changes. We've learned some stuff. It's generally converted better, but we're going to make it even better based on the fact that people are getting stuck on one part of a product finder or whatever thing we've created. And then by the time we hit November, we're up to 100%. Imagine that you've actually developed and built something. And now you've got November and most of December before whatever your delivery cutoff is. You've got that beautiful time to just be absolutely raking in the profits. That's a technical term. So raking in as much revenue as you can throughout that period. So I wouldn't shy away from touching stuff during peak. I would shy away from launching a new website on the 1st of September, this happened more often than I like to admit with our clients without us knowing. We put off more site launches, or advise clients to put off more site launches than we've had, around sort of anywhere between kind of end of August to like January. Don't launch a whole new site, but certainly testing stuff. You've got more traffic, and if it works, you've also got the bigger audience to make more revenue over that time. I think that's a very powerful opportunity to be testing things. What you don't want to do, going back to Rob's comment as well about number of users and getting enough of a data set, you don't want to test something in too much of a quiet time. If you test it in the busier time, you get a more conclusive result quicker. Roll out the new version that you know is better, and then in the next quieter time, you might be converting more, or you might be able to invest more in advertising and getting more users to the site because you're getting a better conversion rate. So actually then you kind of solved your chicken and egg problem of we can be testing all year round now because we've got good enough traffic volumes all the time and they're always profitable. So I think there's a real argument actually for doing more during peak, but obviously I wouldn't do like a whole rebrand test during peak. That's really going to freak people out.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. I think we will wrap it up there, Nick. So thank you, everybody that's joined today. It's been a really enjoyable webinar. And thank you for everyone's comments as well. If anyone would like a copy of the video or of the slides, please do drop us an email. Our email is team@spec.digital. I would love to get in touch. Any other last thoughts, leaving thoughts from you, Nick?
Only thing is, I mean, we're not offering like free audits and stuff today because CRO ones tend to be pretty heavy duty. But if you've got any specific CRO questions or you want us to look at your site, same email address Rob's just said, team@spec.digital. Feel free to reach out to us. We'll also be running another webinar in January, but we haven't set a date or time or topic yet. So if you've got any topic ideas, send us some topic ideas and say, like, do you know what? I'd love a webinar on this. I think everybody would really benefit from this, actually. We're probably going to do some sort of peak wash up is my idea at the moment. But yeah, everyone who signed up to this one and last week's and all previous ones, we'll email all of you guys because we've got your email addresses. So we'll ping something out for Eventbrite. But yeah, thank you so much for coming. Great questions as well. I think, if you come to a future one, get some of these questions teed up in advance. That'd be awesome. Loved answering those. So thank you very much.
Brilliant. Thanks, everyone. Have a good evening.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast. You can subscribe to our weekly newsletter for exclusive offers at winningwithshopify.com. And don't forget to check out our Facebook group by searching for Winning with Shopify on Facebook. Over and out.